big lake, called Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned. Concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they'd been feeling?
Yes.
The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound when the wave broke over the railing. And every man knew, as the captain did too, 'twas the witch of November come stealing. The dawn came late and the breakfast had to wait when the gales of November came slashing. Afternoon came, it was freezing rain in the face of a hurricane west wind.
Is Diane with any Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y? Well, it's a D-I-K-E-L-L at Comcast. D-I-K-E-L-L at Comcast.
Came, the old cook came on deck saying, fellas, it's too rough to feed you.
D-I, he's playing D-I-K-E-L-L. At Comcast.net.
It's been good to know ya. The captain wired in, he had water coming in, and the good ship and crew was in peril. And later that night, when his lights went out of sight, came the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Does anyone know where the love of God goes when the waves turn the minutes to hours? The searchers all say they'd have made Whitefish Bay if they'd put 15 more miles behind her. They might have split up or they might have capsized. They may have broke deep and took water. All that remains is the faces and the names of the wives and the sons and the daughters. Lake Huron rolls, Superior scenes in the rooms of her ice water mansion. Old Michigan steams like a young man's dreams. The islands and bays are for sportsmen. And farther below, Lake Ontario takes in what Lake Erie can send her. The iron boats go, as the mariners all know, with the gales of November remembered. They prayed in the Maritime Sailors' Cathedral. The church bell chimed till it rang 29 times for each man on the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Chippewa down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Superior, they said, never gives up for dead when the gales of November come early.
In Springfield, they're eating the dogs, the people that came in. They're eating the cats. They're eating the pets of the people that live there.
It is time for Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
We're live.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Jimmy on the board. I'm just reading this article here about Scott Bessent is preparing banks for an executive order saying they have to collect citizenship data on people. I think we figured out who the enemy is, and it's not the people that are the citizens here. It might be these guys. Anyway, S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 41, oil up 63 cents. It's the May oil. So up a little bit. Had a record day yesterday. Kind of proving my theory that whenever you want to throw the market up, all you do is pour money into the system. I'm sure everybody's convinced they're genius investors. I know my clients think we're geniuses, but I don't think we did it. I think they did it. But that's just another thing. But what do you think of the big antitrust thing yesterday, Jimmy, with Live Nation? And let me know when Diane pops on.
Didn't hear that. I just know that
Live Nation and Ticketmaster, they claim they've been monopolizing. Do you think?
Oh, for years.
Yeah, it's a. So, the. What do you suppose? If it goes back years, what do you suppose the? You're not going to get any money back, are you? If you bought a concert ticket years ago, there was no mention of any sort of a.
I have no idea, but Live Nation used to be Ticketmaster, and Ticketmaster was, you know. Everybody knew that Ticketmaster was the biggest game in town.
Only because they took over, the hell's the name of the place? There was a guy who worked for me, traded in the OEX for me. And he originally worked, I think, for, he's an accountant. He worked for Ticketron?
Ticketron started, and then it was Ticketmaster, and...
Well, no, it didn't become. They bought him. Seems like every year or two, he was whatever company he was in was being taken over by somebody else.
Right, Ticketron was like the first, and
yeah.
Then it became Ticketmaster. Then Ticketmaster became Live Nation. They keep changing the name.
Well, they didn't become Live Nation. They merged, or took them over, or something.
They merged. Yeah. It was Live Nation merged in with Ticketmaster, and they kind of used that name.
What was Live Nation originally? Just a ticket place?
Yeah.
So now there's one place. Interesting. I know people have been complaining about, well, people complain about tickets forever, but I mean, if you go to a concert, you got to go. Are they the same guys who do the stuff for Major League Baseball?
No, that's SeatGeek.
Okay, no, there's some competition somewhere.
There is. There are SeatGeek and a few other places that do concerts.
Does SeatGeek not do concerts?
SeatGeek does do concerts. But they're, like, compared to Live Nation, yes, had a monopoly. There's just no question about it. Any major place, SeatGeek can do concerts now. The other one is Live Seats. They can, but Live Nation was the one that started putting the servicing fee and other fees, the credit card charge fee, the You Talk to Me fee, all of that.
But who,
with the ticket.
I thought there's two different people that do, like, baseball and football. One directly with the team. And who are the guys like Notre Dame sells their last 1,000 seats to those guys?
It could be, but we do have Diane on the line.
Okay, let's do that.
But SeatGeek is for Major League Baseball.
Well, this morning we have back by popular demand, Diane Kelly, who's the head of Fisher House Chicago, and spends a lot of time at the veterans' places, knows an awful lot about it. We're going to have Andrew and Wayne calling a little early this morning, because Wayne is a veteran. Diane, how are you? Welcome.
Good morning. I'm well, thanks. And you?
Well, I'm hacking a little cough, but I think I'm going to survive.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah, survival looks like it's going to make it, but coughs are never fun. You know, they're just... it's a thing.
It could be allergies, you know. It is the season. Everything's starting to bloom, and the allergies kind of take place right now.
Well, if you're allergic to rain, that would be it. Because all it does is rain.
Yeah.
So, what's going on in your world since you have been on? We had Kenny Pulcheri. I don't know if I told you this. I'm sure I did. He had a lady on from... it's an outside firm that deals with mental problems with the veterans and doesn't really go through the veterans' homes. They do it directly. I think you know what I'm talking about. I forget the name of the place, but they had a big fundraiser in New York that Kenny went to. But anyway, the psychological, we have a guy on the show, Hal Snarr, who has spent a long time in the Navy, and he wasn't a nuclear engineer, but he was on a nuclear ship, and he knew how to keep, you know, the reactors, all the valves, and make sure they didn't blow up, that sort of thing. And he was talking about 30 days without seeing the deck in the Persian Gulf. And now he turned into an economist with triplets. So I guess he dealt with his craziness in one way, right? Became an economist. But I can't believe that kind of pressure on people. And what do you see people? And right now we're having this aircraft. I was thinking about you and this aircraft carrier. It's on its first mission. And they're already pushing 9 or 10 months. At sea.
I know. I mean, but that's, you know, this is the military, and this is what they do. And, you know, I don't think that it's really understood a lot. I mean, I know that one of the managers of a Fisher House who understands the dedication and the service that needs to be done with our military. But she was, I'm grateful that somebody's going to do it. But she goes, I wouldn't want my sons or daughters going into the military. It's it can be really tough on the ones that are serving. Now, some of them, you know, could be stateside or have jobs in offices or, you know, desk jobs and pushing paper and that kind of thing. Which is not as stressful, but boy, the ones that are on a boat or out in serving, it's very difficult, and it's really difficult on the families because, you know, I'm on the board of Blue Star Families, and it's the families that take the blunt end of it. You haven't heard from a loved one for weeks on end, months. And you're trying to keep the home front going. You have children, you got jobs, you got mortgages, you get, you know, pay bills. So it kind of brings me into this whole why I'm asking your, audience to help support our May Friday kickoff for the month of May, which comes into supporting Memorial Day weekend. Everybody, you know, enjoys a long weekend, and that's when kind of officially starts summer. But Memorial Day was really observed because of the Civil War. It was after the Civil War that families were starting to put May 30th, 1868, people were starting to put flowers on the graves of Confederate and Union soldiers in Arlington Cemetery. And it was observed, and it was like, oh, wow. And then it was originally called Decoration Day because everybody would start going around putting flowers on graves at the military. And then after World War One, it was even more prevalent. And then they decided to make it, you know, just a memorial weekend.
Well, I learned something every day when you're in. I thought it was a World War One thing. You're saying it was a Civil War thing. Wow.
Yeah. So, and so there again, Revolutionary Beer, which is down on Kedzie, 3340 North Kedzie, has a lot of veterans working there. It's a Chicago brewery. And they have partnered with us that for the whole month of May, we will get the proceeds of beer sales in the Midwest. And we did this last year, and they gave us a substantial check of $13,000 last year. And
how can you buy that in a store? You got to go to the place.
You got to go to a store, any, you know, Jewel, any local retail store, and pick up a pack of Revolutionary beer, or you can go to your local pub. We're working on local pubs and restaurants and places to take in the beer, and on premise, as we call it, they will give a portion back. So it's on and off of beer sales for the month of May. So Friday, May 8th, we're going to kick off this program at Revolutionary Beer. We're going to have games and food and giveaways, and you'll get to meet some of the board members and people from Fisher House, and then meet some veterans, and you know, we'll give you shirts and hats that you can walk away with, and just basically get to know a little more about veterans' causes and Fisher House, and it's free. So
free?
Free. All you have to do is buy the beer.
If it's free, it's for me.
Yeah.
That was the attitude of a lot of guys on the trading floor. If it's free, it's for me.
Right. So there's no cost
so
to
that's
get
a,
in.
That's a Friday night.
It's a Friday night. So after work, come early and hang. And, you know, we have food and snacks. And all you have to do is buy some beer. And we've got a little wheel of military fortune that you can play a game. And then we have a little putting green that you can practice your little get ready for the golf course. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
Well, we'll make sure we spread that, not just the day you're on. We'll talk about it like every day till then. We get together a little something.
That would be great.
When Mike Murphy was on. Mike is a vet. He's been on a bunch of times, and he was saying he's an officer. He said when he left, they essentially gave him a physical. And, you know, 20 years later, they gave him a physical, compared it with the physical when he went in, to find out if there really was any issues, you know, that he could be done disability or that kind of thing, or. And they kind of compare one to the other. They try and get sort of a thing where you can't say 10 years later he had. But when you have something like one of these, say, I'll just say a ship, is out, it obviously works for people on the ground too, but now when that thing piles back into port, you know, and it's been out there 10 months, 9 months, however many it's going to end up before they finally get to leave, is there some sort of an assessment of the people when they come off, or is any people that kind of maybe went squirrely when they're out at sea or did some crazy stuff? Is there people that catch the problems right away, or not really?
Well, there's always the assessment that once they come off, they're all assessed. But my brother works for the Department of Agriculture, and he's a state inspector. So, you know, they have to go on these boats and test and inspect every single area of these boats to make sure that there's nothing coming back in, and you know, there wasn't anything on there. And then so it's a coordination between inspecting the boats and testing the you know, the people that were on the boat, of any kind of diseases, any kind of pesticides, or any kind of, you know, areas that would not be good to come back into the country and for them to get offshore. So yeah, they do that. So it's a good thing.
Well, so there is a somewhat of a mental health screening of some kind.
Well, mental health.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, that is a big question and a big old black hole, I think, because if you think of mental health, it's just a matter of how everybody handles mental health. I mean, come on, Tom, you and I have both been through our own trauma and mental health issues, and, you know, so you don't even think about it, but, you know, my background, it's like sometimes it's like you bring it back up of thinking of what happened to you and in the orphanage, or, you know, PTSD comes back to everybody in some aspect. It's just a matter of, I guess, how you can handle it. And, you know, what helps this therapist and people that you can talk to. Everybody needs to talk to somebody. I believe that. You know, one of the other areas of military support is a place called Guest House, which is down by UIC. They have their big fundraiser on the 27th of April, and their area is more supportive of mental health areas. So veterans can go in there and spend time, like they can come in, check in on Monday, and spend the week of working with a therapist at UIC and different hospitals around the area, stay at the guest house. They're like little apartments in high rises, and you know, so they get that mental support help if they need it. And so all of us that work with veterans and trying to help in every way that we can, whether it's mental or physical or spiritual, you know, I work in chaplain services, and we have priests that help with spiritual needs also. So we try to keep the whole focus of whatever the service person needs, we're there for them. We've got it covered.
What, just in terms of logistics, I mean, is there some sort of a, I think when most of these guys come off, you know, of a thing at sea, I don't know why I'm talking about that one, it's because I've been reading a lot about the aircraft carrier and listening to Hal all the time. And actually last night I had a adult beverage with a guy who was in the Navy, was on three aircraft carriers, and he was on for 6 months at a time. And I mean, is there some sort of a when you come back off one of those things, a lot of the guys are done with their enlistment, right? So I mean, you don't just pull into Norfolk, have an Uber, and go home and say, honey, what's for dinner? I mean, there's got to be some sort of a buffer in there somewhere, isn't there, or not? I don't know how you...
No, they have a year to kind of like, you know, de-escalate whatever they've been. So they're still on payroll, and they have time to adjust, and, you know, they're just not released and gone. I mean, I know one person that was in Italy and came back, and she pretty much has a year to just kind of you know, figure out what she wants to do, find a job, do things, and it's
can,
not
can
just
she stay on the base or
no, she doesn't. She has a place to she has an apartment, and she's actually going back to teaching. She's going to be a teacher. So
well, it's interesting when you brought that up. I did your few guest appearances have caused me to do a lot more research. It's funny because Wayne will be on in a bit, and Wayne's in maybe early 70s. But one of the guys who actually the guy I went to high school with, he was drafted. My iteration was you could have been drafted. You lost your student deferment, but you weren't going to NAP. So he had like number 4 or something, and he went to Europe. And he drove a truck for 2 years, basically, in Europe. I don't know where he was stationed, one of the bases in Germany. When he came back, he goes, they just mustered you out. He goes, I don't even remember if they paid for my train ticket or whatever. I mean, I see ya. Now, when Hal, you know, Hal's, I'm going to say mid to late 40s, I'm not sure, but he's a lot younger. And he said when he mustered out in Seattle, they had a guy told him all the different schools, they had the best GI Bill, and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was a major difference in support from the Vietnam guys, where they basically said, you know, get your ass out of here. Maybe a Greyhound ticket, maybe not. He doesn't even remember. But, you know, he said some guys didn't even have, the parents had died or moved and didn't have a place to go to. I think that's what Wayne will probably tell us. He said, they asked him, by the way, what, you're still the same address? He goes, my parents left years ago. I don't even know where they live, or something along those lines. He'll tell us when he comes on. So there's been a great improvement on that along the way, I think.
Oh, a huge improvement, because they realize that they can't do that. I mean, that's just cause for, you know, a lot of stress and PTSD, and so now they've realized that this is, and I think the biggest issue is that I know that some of these men that come off, because the camaraderie, the you know, the togetherness and what they have with their group, that when they are brought back and they're dispersed and, you know, they've lost that connection, that they just, it's a culture that if you don't understand it, I don't think you're going to understand it. But it's that close-knit culture is amazing. And that's why so many of the suicides have been because of the lack of that, you know, what am I going to do now? My whole life has been connected with this group, and I have a purpose. And so this is where now trying to get more veterans involved in these veteran causes, because now it gives them a sense of duty and purpose to help these veteran causes. And, you know, there are a lot of veterans that are going into business and starting businesses and helping to, you know, pay back with some support, just like Revolutionary Beer. A lot of veterans there, so, you know, they're helping out with their fellow guys and teammates with support with veteran causes. So the military understands that, and that's why now there's a totally new direction of helping to transition them from military to civilian life. Totally different.
Jimmy, let me know if the other guys pile in.
They are here.
Andrew, Wayne, meet Diane.
Hello, Wayne. Diane.
Hi. And Wayne, you're on too?
Yep.
I am here, yes.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Andrew here.
Wayne, tell Diane what happened when you mustered out.
Well, it was actually not when I got out. I was involved in a pretty serious investigation that wound up with my commanding officer going to Fort Leavenworth, where he had three hots and a cot, supposedly for several years, but he didn't do several years. And so, you know, the Navy, even though I was a temporary special agent then for NIS, now NCIS, and the FBI, I was ordered to go to my home of record to find out where my next duty station was going to be. Well, my home of record was back in New Jersey. My parents moved away from that house. And I said, well, I can't go back to my home of record. Somebody else lives there now. But I understand that, you know, getting out of the service and the issues people have, because I was fortunate when I did get out of the Navy, I wound up getting a job at RCA Corporation, and my immediate boss was a Navy veteran and also was still in the Navy Reserve. So that helped. That helped a lot, and a lot of the people I worked with were veterans. Some actually back to World War II, which that always helps, I think, a little bit, because yes, you lose that camaraderie you have when you're in the service, but depending on what job you land in, if there's other veterans there, that certainly helps quite a bit. It helped me quite a bit.
How come you weren't on the TV show? NCIS. Andrew, do you think he would have been a great carry? Would he have been Gibbs, or would he have been one of the other guys?
Well, he would have been good, but Wayne has kind of glossed over, because he wanted to answer your question of what happened afterwards, so he kind of went on a glide path. That's what it's like to investigate your commanding officer and be a special FBI agent. And we'll get back to the main topic, but my understanding is it's not an easy, smooth life. They don't necessarily like that, even though the certain investigative arms might get you involved, but it's not popular.
Well, it was such a bizarre situation. When I finally did get assigned to my new duty station in Washington, outside of Washington, D.C., I show up there. There's no CO. There's no other military. There's a GS-15 civil service guy in charge, and he says, "What are you doing here? They haven't." He said, "They haven't filled that billet here for about 6 years." And he says, "Well, welcome to the center. And by the way, you don't have to wear that uniform anymore."
God. Well, to get back to the main topic, although with one slight diversion, one time Wayne and I were doing an investigation, we stopped off in New Jersey to meet this, not the one who was investigated, but I think it was your RCA boss.
And yeah.
We had it. So Wayne's got his own little veterans camaraderie circle. It was quite pleasant. But I think we're both very excited to be on with you, Diane, because it's such an important topic that's the main focus here.
Diane, if I can interject, the place, Diane, they have a Fisher House in Maywood, and they just completed one up at Great Lakes, right?
Correct.
And that's the thing that's kind of unique that I want you guys to dig into better than I can. Is that the only place, Diane, it serves both active people and, you know, people in the Veterans Hospital? I mean, how has that changed since, say, in the last year with the war stuff going on? Is the mix of people in the hospital there different?
Yes, I mean, Captain James Lovell Federal Healthcare Center is one of a kind because it's both Navy and Army combined, all military services, Federal Healthcare Center. And, you know, that is the largest recruiting center in the country right now, Great Lakes Naval Base. So they were telling me that they have 5,000 graduations a week. And I couldn't believe the number that they were talking about of people, the recruits coming in and graduating and getting going through, but they're all over the world that they come in, or the country, I mean. So it's a large facility of support, and probably more so of the recruits that are being taken care of because of injuries or whatever happens, you know. So that Fisher House is actually helping to support not only the veterans or anyone that's getting medical care at Captain James Hospital, but also the recruits that are up there that need care, whether it's appendix out or broken leg or
Well, they must get a lot of business with 5,000 people a week.
Sorry?
You must get a lot of people with 5,000 people a week. Basically exercising all day long, you're going to get people hurt.
Right. I really thought that, it says your internet connection is, wait a minute. All right. Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Okay.
You're fine.
So I was kind of surprised. I mean, maybe it's 3,000. It was just an enormous. I have to really check and give.
Well,
you
it's the only training center for the Navy, right?
Right. Yeah, it is. So it's really huge. But you know, Hines, which is over at VA Hospital, they're actually redoing portions of Hines Hospital now, and making a larger section of outpatient care now, which they haven't had, which makes me realize that they need to have more of veterans being able to come in and get some treatment and then be able to go home. So, and I don't know if that is more on a mental health issue of outpatient or, you know, what kind of outpatient care are they really looking at doing? But that's supposedly, that new wing is going to be taking, probably be done by the end of this fall.
Well, they still have, they have little satellite places around. I mean, Wayne, don't you, my stepfather went to one of those. It was on Evergreen Park somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, where I'm down here in Tampa, I would say there's we've got the main hospital in East Tampa, but there's a lot of other outpatient facilities, and I've got I drive to two of them, not real close to me, but close enough. Because they have different services. Like one has a CT scanning machine that the other one doesn't have. So, but you know, it's a lot better than going to the main hospital, because there's been a parking issue for I can't remember how long, and now they're building an addition onto their parking garage, but. You got to get there real early to be sure to get a parking spot.
Go ahead, Jane.
No, I think Wayne's right. I mean, as far as like, you know, outpatient care, especially at Hines now, they really need a larger support area of patient care outpatient. I don't know where, if you're an outpatient and you need care. I think, I know like, down at UIC, there's a lot of outpatient care and support areas down there. But at Hines, it's not. They don't have a lot. You either go into the emergency room and you're going into the hospital for specific, you know, treatment kind. Outpatient is not something that they're known for, and I think that's what they're going to.
So they don't really have the equivalent of an urgent care center for veterans.
Right. Yeah.
The place that is now UIC. What was the name of that place? That was actually a veterans hospital at one time, wasn't it?
Well, Jesse Brown is still down there.
Okay.
Jesse Brown is still part of, you know, it's a VA hospital.
Do you guys have a place there?
So, that was one of the things Jesse Brown has requested at Fisher House down at, but it's never going to happen. There's no place to put a Fisher House down there, so that's where the guest house, which has been around for, you know, a few years. It's been there for a while. They are the support system for veterans that are doing outpatient care at Jesse Brown, at Rush, at UIC. So if you need to spend time down there, you can stay at guest house, small little apartments, which you can, you know, daily base or weekly base, but it's not on the same level as the Fisher houses, but they're in a high-rise building. But it's a really nice place for any veteran to stay while they're getting care for that week.
For those that don't know what the hell we're talking about, Fisher House is sort of like the Ronald McDonald House for veterans, where your family can stay there if you're getting a new leg, a new something, you're in for chemo or whatever. The people in Maywood, a lot of that is for chemo treatment, right? Family,
yes.
Brings people up.
Right. I was just watching a video the other day. There's a gentleman who was, his son was in Iraq, and he ended up getting cancer, and he was at Hines for 18 months, and he stayed at Fisher House for 18 months. And his comment was that if he hadn't had Fisher House to stay there, that 18 months that he got to spend with his son would have never happened, because they were connected. And he said it gave his son a life of 18 months that was worthwhile. And so that's the stories of Fisher House, whether it's, you know, a week or 6 months, 18 months has actually been pretty much the longest time somebody stayed there. But on an average, it's about a week to 10 days. that a family stays at a Fisher Host.
Well, just as a geography sort of thing, then I'll let these guys ask questions because they know more about this than me. In terms of these centers, like in Tampa where Wayne is, or there's a couple places, obviously a few places here in Chicago, you have people coming from, you know, Centralia, Decatur, places like that, to get their treatments. And if they have a, you know, if they have a artificial limb or something, they're coming up here to get it done. There's no, so every one of these places has like a surrounding area that, you know, people have to drive people here, and they need a place to stay, right? It's not like every town has a veterans place, right?
No, and there's a Fisher House in St. Louis. So if you're in Southern Illinois and you're really closer to the hospital or the area of Fisher House in St. Louis, you could possibly go to that hospital. But what happens is that most of these hospitals have, you know, specific areas that they're expert in, like Hines is the blind center, the dialysis, the chemo center. So, you know, in St. Louis, if you're burned, you go to Texas, the burn center. So the hospitals have specific areas of where treatments are, utilized the best for the veteran. But you have to be 50 miles outside of a radius to be able to stay at Fisher House. So we Indiana, Ohio, actually Wisconsin, Southern Illinois.
There's no real hospital between here and St. Louis, I guess is the question.
No, there's not. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
All right, Wayne, you and Andrew, take over.
Yeah, that's certainly the case here, too, in Florida. I understand that for some treatment, even Tampa VA hospital can't provide that. And I forget what the particular issue is, but a lot of people in this area have to go to the VA hospital up in Gainesville, which might have something to do with the University of Florida being up there. One thing I've noticed with the VA hospital here, there's a lot of crossover. Some of the doctors at the VA are actually on loan from other hospitals, including the Tampa VA hospital is just across the highway from the University of South Florida, which has its own medical facility, med school. So I've seen that more and more over the last, say, 10 years. A lot of cross-pollination between VA doctors and doctors coming in from university hospitals and private hospitals.
And
also,
that's absolutely true, because so Loyola is, you know, a receptacle for Hines. A lot of the doctors, and particularly because it's a teaching school, those students, they get their education over at Hines. And so, you know, I can always tell when the new students are coming in. I see them, you know, they're all coming in and following doctors around. So, but it's a good experience, I think, for them. And one of the areas that I know that, you know, they talk about the doctor care at Hines is one of the best. And so they, same thing with Lovell. Roslyn Medical School is up there. So Roslyn, same thing. Roslyn teachers, students will go into Lovell and get some education. And there again, you know, the same thing with the UIC and Rush and down in with Jesse Brown. So there's always that working together on hospital knowledge and care and students coming in with schools. So I can't say for all of the 35 states that have Fisher Houses if they're all put into areas where there's a medical school and hospital. Most of it is hospitals, but I don't know how many schools would be close by. So,
well, yeah. Funny you should mention that, because one of the people we had on after the last time you came on and talked about this is our, you know, my old roommate, Dr. Johnson, and he's a psychologist, and he was a veteran. And he said
cool.
Guy, yeah, the guy who was, he went to to Dartmouth for his PhD, and actually the Army put him through med school, and he ended up there's a veterans home I think in near Hanover, and the person who runs the place or did run the place years and years ago was a psychologist, and he was very aware of the mental issues, and that became the leading center for veterans psychology issues, and he was on the board or ran the board whatever in Washington, and you know the veterans whatever board there is that decides who gets what services and whatever, he was on that till he like retired or died or something. So that mm-hmm. I think the psychology center started out to be in Hanover because of this guy.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I mean so he was and that's where Dr. Johnson, that's where he did a lot of his work. So he was one of the guys that would do a lot of pro bono stuff for the veterans place. So you're right about the crossover in the doctors. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
you're right.
And that's actually a good thing, because I think they learn and get good training and realize, you know, a lot of these young doctors, then they get to realize what the sacrifice and what these veterans have gone through. So I think that's a good thing.
Well, you know, it's so great to have people that do this stuff. Everybody knows. I mean, I bore Wayne and Andrew every week with my constantly coming back to numbers, and you know, it's sort of like feeding people in Chicago. You know, it's great that the food depository serves what do they serve, Diane? 200,000 meals a day or something?
Oh,
I mean, it's great they do that.
Yeah,
and it's great you do what you're doing, but when we quote go to war, it should be acknowledged by people that this is the cost of going to war, and it ought to be kind of covered by everybody. I mean, not just, there's always going to be somebody like you who shows up and helps people with church and communion and things like that. I mean, you're not going to budget that, I suppose, but the fact is your time's not free. And when we went to Iraq, there were people that were capable, and Wayne and Andrew know them. It'll say, if we're at war for 6 months and this many people dying and wounded, here's the tab. And I remember reading back at the day we did Gulf War II, somebody wrote this article, and you always remember the authors. What did he say? It was going to be $1.5 trillion over the next 30 years. And governments never admitted to that, and they probably aren't. You know what I'm saying? Part of that money.
I mean, and you're absolutely right. But, you know, I guess the only thing that I try to, you know, thank God we have people that are still willing to join the military, go into the military, and support our country. I mean, and it really bothers me that people don't understand the sacrifices that, you know, starting from the Civil War, war is not, it's terrible, but it happens. And, you know, as they say, freedom is not free. And we have to be so grateful for these young men and women that are willing to step up and go do the job that I would say most people won't do. So,
well, there was a time where everybody sort of did because they had a draft of everybody, but now it's not that.
Right.
Although evidently it's coming back again, right, Wayne?
Yeah, that's right. They're,
I've heard that. Yeah. Can they do that?
Yeah. Yes, because every male 18, I forget what the upper cutoff age is, but is supposed to register with the Selective Service system. And, you know, they don't really do it, but now it's going to be required apparently at the end of the year. They're talking about that. And, you know, I also wanted to add, you're very fortunate in Illinois to have as one of your U.S. senators a disabled combat vet, Tammy Duckworth. And, you know, I you don't have to convince somebody like her of, you know, the needs for veterans and especially disabled veterans. So a lot of states don't have that luxury. And even if there's a senator who may have had a few years in, chances are they were with some staff, had some staff job, or they were JAG Corps officers or something like that. So, but I mean, she definitely gets it. It's kind of rare these days when you get a Duckworth, or, well, in the case of Arizona, they had McCain there for quite a long time.
Right.
Well, the you know, but I mean, it is a cost that, and you wonder in terms of policy. I don't want to get into policy, but you know, if Bush would have come out and said, "We're going to Iraq. Oh, by the way, it's going to cost X. So for the next 4 years, there's a 25% you know, kicker on your income tax." I'm not so sure we'd have gone.
Well, he was being advised by Dick Cheney, who was another guy that had five draft deferments during Vietnam, sort of like somebody we have in the White House now.
Yeah, it's a it's always wondered for the generals to be lectured by a draft dodger. I always thought that was kind of an odd. Of course, we had the vice president lecturing the Pope on theology yesterday, so I thought that was
That was rich. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like me lecturing Bruce Lee on Kung Fu. I'm like, yeah, that's not the way you do it. Wait.
hey, Chief, I got to also tell you, they're talking about raising the age now to where you can enlist. It would probably apply to the draft if they bring it back. I think it's up to 43 now. So
yeah,
they're
did you see
working
that?
Their way up.
Did you see that, Diane, where they raised the maximum age at which you can enlist from, what, 35 to 43?
Yeah, it's great. It's,
you know, talk about today's world. You're talking about the basic. I was with your friend Audrey was out of town, so anyway, this guy was watching her dog, so I went out and took the guy to lunch. We went to that little place on 143rd, and we're talking about a little bit about politics, and the guy at the next table is this Hispanic guy, and he goes, "Hey, do you mind if I pile in?" I go, "No." You know, it's one of those kind of places. Turns out the guy's a decorated Marine vet, and his kid's in the Marines. And he's telling me how they, well, first of all, he was saying how they're promising all these kids that enter, Hispanic kids that enter the Army or the Marines, not only they're going to get the short shift of citizenship, but their parents are going to get. And he goes, it never happens. But you know, one thing he said is you don't just take a kid now maybe they think they're on their cell phone all the time, and it's kind of a shot, but he goes, they don't just go right into boot camp. There's a place in Chicago Heights that's kind of an intermediate step to see if these kids have any, you know, can they do a push-up, basically, and mentally, if they're even remotely anybody wants. So it's, you don't just ship everybody on the bus down to wherever like you see in the movies.
Well, they're going to, I mean, that's something that needs to be done before they go in, because, so one of the people that's on my board, her brother is a recruiting officer at the Pentagon, and she was telling me that he was getting phone calls from the mothers of these recruits of, like, what are you doing to my child? And, you know, it's just kind of, I guess, a sign of the times of children that have been pampered so much. I mean, I don't know. We're all at the age that it's kind of like, man, you had to tough it out and do whatever it took to get something done. But these kids are pretty pampered. It's like, wow, you can't expect them to do too much. And it's kind of like, then why did you join the military? It's like, so I don't know that they know. I think they think about the fact that they're going to get a free education and they just join it. So. But I think there should be some, you know, requirements that they should know the candidates before they go in.
Well, it's sort of like your first football practice. Wow.
Well, people join for a variety of motives, of course, as you know. And one is that kind of opportunity that might not be available in the civilian world. So it's a combination of public service, glamour, and also necessity of an opportunity when maybe factory jobs or other routes are simply not available. But whatever the motive, there's got to be obligations on the rest of society to at least take care for the injured. So I'll spare some of the thoughts that I have floating around in my mind, but
I can really visualize. I pretty much know your thoughts. I kind of can get a good idea of what you're thinking.
Well, here's one that I doubt if you'd visualize, but the person involved that I won't mention except by state, Alabama, is a good friend of Wayne and ours, and she's a cantankerous gal. And when a recruiter came to the high school and was promising, I think it was $5,000 sign-up bonus, and her son's girlfriend got very excited about that. Here's what under Wayne and I did. She told her son that she was going to tie him to a tree and shoot his foot so that he couldn't join. And then she went down to the recruiting office and told him to not go after her son with his bonus. And then she told the high school girlfriend to stop talking about how they could get a down payment on a car. And that solved her narrow problem. There was no more recruitment. But so I'm not sure if you've heard the story.
No, but it doesn't surprise me. It just doesn't surprise me. I guess I'm just not surprised at anything anymore. I mean, what happens in
well, you know, you mentioned, again, I always drive the logistics of this, which is, I guess, a curse and a gift, more of a curse. We mentioned the Memorial Day celebration.
Yep.
And I don't know, I'm sure you were down to Audrey's place in Ogden Dunes. Anyway, she has a bunch of friends down there. And whenever we were down there Memorial Day, they actually have a Memorial Day parade. You know, people drag out their old cars and the fire trucks and the usual stuff. But it's a very serious thing. I mean, cities like where Ogden Dunes is generally have a much higher percentage of people who are in the service and have died in the service than the cities. I mean, maybe not World War II, maybe not, but now there is. I mean,
whenever you're right, Tom, because so Arlington Heights, huge Memorial Day. Lake Forest, I mean, these Park Ridge, some of these areas really get behind Memorial Day celebrations. And I mean, I think some of it has to do with the anchors of American legions in these areas and, you know, the posts that still support. So it's very patriotic and, you know, which it should be. And, you know, I'm grateful that we still have some of these areas that will support our military and do the parades and make people think about, you know, that you have the opportunity to be in a free country to celebrate for the weekend and enjoy your barbecue and you know.
Well, when they start rattling off the names of the people in Portage that have died in the wars in the last 20 years, it's a long list, you know. I mean, and I remember when I would... Well, we don't go down there much anymore, but my extended family's in Columbus. And of course, Sunday morning, everybody else is asleep. I'm up as usual. And I get the paper and I start reading. There was always some group of small town around Columbus, you know, the something county, you know, Jeep mechanics group was going to Afghanistan or something. And some other groups coming back. You never saw that in Chicago. I mean,
No, exactly. Chicago, you're not going to see.
You're not seeing any of that. And I think they last little flip, and then I'll let these guys talk some more. But Audrey and I went to this funeral. I mentioned this before, out in Marengo. And, you know, it's kind of an odd deal. Diana, it was one of those, there was no wake, no church. The body just comes to the cemetery, right? So we're there early and waiting for a hearse to show up with the body. I mean, how macabre is that? So, of course, now that I'm the foolish host of Stocks and Jacks, I observe everything. I start looking down at all these headstones have veterans, you know, badges on them. And I'm looking at these guys are World War II, some were Korea. I'm looking at the ages, 55, 58, 60. Maybe there's a 72 in there. All these dudes died young.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably all smoked. They probably did God knows what else.
I was going to say.
But, I mean, whatever it is, you go by there, and I didn't see an 80 in the bunch, and I must have walked by 30 of these things. They're all veterans, and they all died, almost all of them, by 65, maybe by 60. I'm thinking, wow, what a toll.
Yeah.
And exactly. There's no veterans home in Marengo that I know of. I mean, I don't think these people are well served at all. Even though, you know, if they get up here, if the family knows enough to stay at Fisher House, somebody's making an attempt, you and other people. But I still don't. What do you think, Wayne? How many people are served at all by this?
Yeah, you know, I was going to mention, I maybe thanks to AI or some, you know, improved graphics programs. But you know, a lot of these very old videos are now being sort of refurbished and colorized. This is from around the turn of the last century. And, you know, somebody had a camera, say, on, you know, Fifth Avenue in New York. But now you can actually look at the faces of some of the people on the street. And what gets me is the number of middle-aged men who are middle-aged, maybe a little older, walking around without one leg, you know, with a crutch. And you got to assume there's so many of them. And Diane, you mentioned the Civil War earlier. They must be Civil War veterans because, you know, the what they did back then, and they didn't even have modern anesthesia. They would just saw their legs off. It was horrible.
The bullet would hit and expand and take out the bone. They really didn't have much choice.
Yeah, and I remember talking. Well, I remember when I was young, we used to have 4th of July parades, and there was always a group of elderly men who were World War I vets. Well, you don't see them anymore. You don't hardly see World War II vets. But I remember talking to my great uncle, who lived with us for a while. He was born in 1885, and he said, hey, when I used to go to the 4th of July parades in Philadelphia, they had contingents of Civil War veterans.
Yeah, they would. Oh. Yeah, exactly.
And none of them were treated, you know. Well, we know what happened to the Bonus March, the World War One vets in Washington, and you know that we haven't always treated veterans very well. It was like, hey, thanks for your service, thanks for your leg or your arm. Now you know, hit the bricks, buddy.
They didn't get their money till 1936.
That's right. And you know, the guy that, of course, ran them out of there and killed some of them was none other than General Douglas MacArthur.
With Eisenhower as his assistant.
And that boy, did that sour Eisenhower on MacArthur. A feud that exists, continued during the war and after the war. Fortunately, they were not in the same theater of operations. But in presidential politics later on, Eisenhower had no time for MacArthur.
Could there ever have been a bigger pompous ass than MacArthur?
In the military, probably not. Although there's a lot of close runners up.
Andrew, you were saying something.
I was going to mention. What I think is an important anniversary yesterday. The USS Gerald R. Ford broke the post-Cold War deployment record for 255 days at sea. And what this means is the people assigned who were supposed to be back by Christmas are still out there, and they will be out there at least until May. Think of what that's like, and maybe Wayne or Diane can amplify, but it's not just veterans, it's soon to be veterans who sometimes have a very harsh duty even before they assume veteran status.
That's the first time out for that ship, too. Right?
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's just a number to most people. Actually, I misspoke. It's 295 days, I think.
They were in the Mediterranean. Then they got sent over to Venezuela for that little episode. then they get sent back to the Mediterranean. Now where are they? They're in the Mediterranean or in the Persian? Or
they're on the island of Crete because they suffered a what they called a laundry fire on board. But that sounds to go into repairs in Crete from a laundry fire. I'm not sure I'm buying that story entirely. There is talk that it may have been hit by Iranian fire when it was in the Gulf of Oman.
Well, Hal's contention on that was when you don't go in after 6 months, the lint build up and those kinds of things that's supposed to be cleaned out when the thing gets rehabbed, you start pushing 9 months, all of a sudden you got way too much lint. It could have happened.
Yeah. It could have, but and one thing I do know about the Navy is one thing they excel at is when they screw up, they really cover up, and they do it very well.
Diane, what else would you like to say to these guys?
No, I'm just if your audience could, if anyone that's in the city on Friday, May 8th, come join us. At Revolutionary Beer at the brewery. We're kicking off the month of May in support of our veterans for Memorial Day support. It is Heroes for Heroes party. Mm. And Heroes is the beer from Revolutionary Beer. And our heroes are our veterans, our military service group that needs to stay at Fisher House. We get 50% of beer sales that day, and then a percentage of the whole month of May comes to Friends of Fisher House with donations, and we really could use the support. So thank you guys for your service.
Dan, we don't mind one more question. We've mentioned a lot about people being ways away from these places. What happens if some dude or lady is in Centralia and doesn't have a family? How does he get up here for his chemo? Is there any kind of transportation for these places?
She could call Hines and ask for any kind of public transportation that they have. But I'm not really sure about, we have local transportation. They have buses at Hines. We, can take people around. Like, if you need to go down to, so let's just, for instance, say that facility is not capable of taking care of whatever your needs are, and you have to go to UIC or Rush, or so we have transportation for there. Or somebody that's at Jesse Brown's needs to come to Loyola, or because they're having surgery, so we have transportation for that. But out of state, no, they're really going to have to get their own transportation to us, and then we can take care of them once they're here.
Well, that's kind of exactly my theme, is that people from these smaller towns are overutilized and underserved, it seems.
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's true. But they do find a way to come up, Tom, and then they're here, and then we take care of them, and that's
well, good for you. And we're gonna push every day between now and then on the Revolution Brewing. And I think if somebody heads to the Jewel, it wouldn't hurt them to pick up some Revolution Brew. It's probably pretty good, I would imagine.
There you go. That's it.
You said the magic word there for Andy and I. You said beer. We may come out there ourselves.
Oh, that would be great. That would be great.
Di, if you meet these two guys, it'll be something you never forget.
Actually, I think you should make a plan to come up, give you a tour of Fisher House. Not that you, I mean, if you're in Florida, you've seen lots of Fisher Houses. Texas has the largest Fisher Houses group. There's 9 of them in Texas. I think there's 6 in Florida and 6 in California. So,
what do you have here? 2?
2, right. Most other states have just 1. But 2 to 3 is basically the max of the rest of the country.
How many are in New York? There's got to be a bunch there.
I believe there's 1 in New York.
Really?
But it's Maryland, Philadelphia, Rhode Island. The East Coast has a lot. Out with the Great Lakes. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Let's see. Bethesda, Maryland has, I think there's three out there.
And all the different areas have somebody like you that kind of runs the area picture houses?
Not all of them, but most of them. Most of them have organizations that we have a general manager that runs the houses, and then we work with the general managers. The general managers are employees of the VA. And the VA, it's their job to kind of facilitate the houses. The houses are properties of the VA, but we are the ones that take care of the needs on a daily basis, meaning I pay for Comcast, lawn service, food, expenses, electrical. We pay for the maintenance and the day-to-day expenses of the houses.
Okay. So. But the guy, the original Fisher, the big endowment firm, the guy's name was Fisher. What do they pay for? Do they pay for the new house, or what do?
They pay for the houses. So to give you an idea, Heinz is 16 years old. When they built that house, it was $7.5 million. So Lovell came in at 12. So that gives you an idea of the cost of these homes.
I can imagine. How many people can stay at Lovell?
16 rooms. 16 families can stay at Lovell, and 21 families can stay at Heinz.
But if you have an oversupply, you guys pay for the motel room, right?
Exactly. So I have reciprocals of hotels in, on Mannheim, we have two hotels that we work with, and then up in Waukegan, I have two hotels that I work with.
Wow. Well, Diane, great stuff. We'll make sure we'll get you back on before our 8th, so we get more current on this. It's not that far away, but...
Right.
We love having
you
on about anything. So,
all the best, Diane.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye.
That's you guys. If you come to Chicago, you have to meet her. It's one sweet lady. She's a sommelier.
Oh, that's right. How about that? Yeah.
So when you guys are drinking,
there's two reasons for Andy and I to come out there: beer and wine.
For you guys to go grabbing your $2 chuck, she'd be looking down at you two dudes. She says, what's the stuff where it hangs on the side of the glass, the something, the legs? You guys don't even know what legs are. You just shove it in.
And I've been known to sniff the twist-off cap.
God.
For the vintage.
I think actually, don't most people think that the twist-off cap's actually better?
They claim that the reason they corked the wine was to try to preserve it, but you know, with modern technology, you know, it doesn't matter. I have heard people say it's even better tasting if it's on with a twist off cap.
Well, I think I did a couple of tours when I was out there for a wedding, and Andrew, you're probably the expert on this. I think if you want to keep a wine for like 30 years, don't you have to, in a vacuum, pull the cork out and put a new one in like every 10 years or something?
Decanting thing, yeah.
Well, I believe you guys are right that for recent wines, screw top is pretty much the same. I think for older wines, a cork adds... luster or other high-toned aspects, but for those of us trying to make decisions between Thunderbird and Ripple, these are moot points.
can you still buy that stuff?
Actually, not. But
I can't imagine.
I like to pretend I'm so young.
Boone's Farm, remember that stuff? Oh God.
Oh yeah, and Annie Greenspring was one of our go-to wines in college.
Anyway, I'm happy to have you guys on. I did some work yesterday, and I'm gonna annoy the hell out of you with this, but I tried to do a similarity check between the COVID situation. I was, like last week, regaling you guys with my views as the same as the Vietnam thing, you know, with the money pouring in and all those kinds of things. And I looked back at the COVID, and I looked at the S&P on 2/3/20, so like the month before COVID, was roughly 296. So it went down, you know, when we shut everything down. but by the 1st of May, it was already higher than it was before COVID, which most people would say, wow, nobody's working, the place is shut down, why is the market going up? Well, in those few weeks, from February to April, the Fed put 10% additional money into the system. And by the time COVID was kind of over, 1/3/2022, the market was 449, which was up 52%, with the money supply up a little more than 40%. So it's almost a 1-to-1 raise. And you could say, or you could listen to the people, I was going to say something nasty, on TV the whole way to 2 years talking about market is up because people are anticipating COVID ending or something like that. It had nothing to do with that. And now we see this huge raise in the market here the last 10 days. You know, and we're doing real well for most. We got caught in a couple of places where they're up huge, but by and large, we're doing great. So I'm not bitching about it from my client's perspective, but the same thing. The Fed has, the balance sheet has gone up $80 billion in 6 weeks. We've had three, with the last month's money supply number, now we won't get this one, March until the end of April, which is disturbing. They're talking about a 10-11% growth. This is the month before the war. Well, so it's the exact same thing, and people think that they're geniuses because the stocks are up. It has nothing to do with the stocks.
I heard your discussion of this earlier in the week, and I mentioned it to Wayne, who I don't think was... had a chance to listen in. I found it fascinating what you say, and here's a question for the host. Why is that, what you've just talked about, that trend of the money supply, not a part of the normal coverage of the Fed, which focuses so much on interest rates and the future of Powell and so forth?
You'll never get the question from anybody, and I don't.
Why?
I wish I was asking you the question. I have no idea. But part of it has to do with the lady who wrote the book, The New Monetary Policy, that was put on Joe Biden's Economic Advisors Board. They don't have to worry about money supply. I mean, I can't think of anything more ignorant. If we double the amount of money in the system, why wouldn't the price of everything double? I mean, how could it not? I mean, money is like anything else. It's just another good. It derives its value by its scarcity, right? I mean, I learned this so early, and it's so obvious, and I don't know anybody now I even talk to has any idea what I'm talking about. But this was on the tip of everybody's tongue in 1982. It's all everybody talked about. The money supply came out Thursday afternoon. I don't know if you guys ever traded the OEX. It was the biggest. That's where I traded for 20 years. It was the biggest product at the time. It was the options exchange index. It was an American settled cash, American meaning you could exercise it any time, cash settled every day. So when you exercise it at night, you got the money. So if OEX was 280 and you exercise the 270 calls, you got $10 that night. So they made it so you had to let people know you're going to exercise by 320. Now you might say, hey, Buffalo Breath, why was that? Well, because the money supply came out on Thursday night at 3:30. And they didn't want anybody seeing the numbers and exercising afterward. Now, does anybody know where the money... Now, they don't even put the money supply out weekly. They do it monthly in arrears. And I don't get it. It's now, there's other variances of this, according to Hal. I don't know if you've listened to him. I didn't understand what the hell he was talking about, to be honest, the first day, because he wrote some paper. But now he's gotten very refined on this. He makes a connection between the Federal Reserve stuff and the banking laws and how it's more difficult to give... Banks don't really want to give loans to, like, smaller people because they can kick the money back to the Federal Reserve at night. It's M0, which I never even knew what that was until a year ago. And so they put the money in the system, but then they draw it out for interest. That's why banks actually are earning more from the Fed overnight than they are paying people in their passbook. Which is insane when you think about it.
Sounds like the old check-kiting operation. Yeah,
His point is, it's even worse than it seems, because some people, because the rate of inflation is actually a lot higher than they're telling us, some people are borrowing money for assets at less than the inflation rate. and other people are getting absolutely screwed by credit cards and everything else because we're paying way over the inflation rate. And that, because of the combination of what the banks are doing and the banking laws, that is probably 70% of the reason why we now have a K-shaped economy, where a few people are doing incredibly well and the rest of the people not so well. I don't know if you've been following that at all, Andrew, but now it's starting to make sense. And he actually made a presentation at Auburn, was it Auburn University, like last week, where he went and presented this, and I guess it was pretty well received. But it's something you wouldn't even really think about, would you?
Well, we don't think about it because the normal mainstream coverage doesn't really address it. And it's almost inexplicable because, you know, the top reporters are paid to supposedly convey the important information to people who care about the Fed and interest and the rates in the economy.
Well, how you could have a news conference afterward and say the money supply looks like it's ticked up 1% last month? What are you doing? How do you don't get that question? I'll ask the question back to you, Andrew. How do you not get that question? The people there are so brainwashed that they don't even know what it is anymore, or what?
Well, it's hard to say. I wish I had a better answer than that, but I'll just leave it at that. Even though I spend a lot of time with reporters on the beat, you know, when they're relaxing, they don't necessarily appreciate tough questions. Why don't you ask tougher questions and put it in your writing? That's not welcome conversation.
Well, the safety valve, when a government does that, the things that are going to happen is, first, you're going to get inflation, all right? Because then all of a sudden, but the government, in a lot of ways, loves that because they benefit by it. Taxes go up and those kinds of things, and the money they repay people back 10 or 30 years later is way less than value of the money they borrowed from in the first place. So it's supposed to be in the interest number. Okay, the interest you and I pay is supposed to be the real rate of interest, how much somebody's charging for the money. And by the way, if everybody knows that the money's going to be worth 5% less next year, you should be covering that too, right? Just to make the guy even. So if the real rate of interest is 3, the inflation is going to be 5, you should be paying this guy or expect to get 8. Now, so that should happen. Now, and obviously during the Vietnam era, when they did the same thing, they poured money into the system to pay for the Vietnam War, your mom, my mom, could go down to the bank and get 15%. Because if the inflation was 12, and oh, by the way, she's getting 3%. Duh, 12 plus 3 is 15, and that's what she got. Well, now this time, why didn't it happen? Now, when we went the 10 and 30-year rates down to like 1.5% a few years ago, and you guys were on, I kept saying, this is the greatest trade in the world. How do you not sell these bonds here? I mean, if you sell the bond, you think rates are going down, because I better say this for a second, guys, sorry. If the bond you're trading is 8%, okay, the market rate is 6%, the bond's going to trade about 120. Because if you pay a premium for the bond, even though you're going to get $8,000 a year, because you paid 120 for it, it only comes out to 6% market rate, correct? So I hope I didn't lose everybody there. But so the best trade I've ever seen since I joined the business, except when I was very young and saw the Dow at like 800, where I thought it was going to go up, still I was 18 months early. This time I'm going, okay, only a moron doesn't short these bonds. Yet I probably did it 15 times for clients, and I'm saying I made money 8 and didn't on 7. What was I missing? And I ask myself every day, just like you guys do, what was I missing? I was missing the part about the Fed running the balance sheet up $7 trillion. So every time I went to sell a bond, the Fed was buying it from me. And guess what? They're a little bigger than I am. Now, you and I might say, well, for God's sake, look at the deficits we've got. We're pushing $1 million every 22 seconds now. somewhere along the line, especially as we're pissing off the people who come here and invest, Japan, Britain, all those places, we're going to have to start paying higher interest. So we might actually be dumb enough to say, we're going to short these bonds. Yet, oh, look. Now, this time I look for it. In the last 6 weeks, the Fed has bought $80 billion worth of bonds. And I got news for you. You know, Wayne might have a bunch of dough, but we're not going to fight the Fed. We don't have $81 billion to buy, to sell when they're buying, do we?
Well, I certainly don't.
So now they think they have all the bases covered, but I'm not sure they do. I mean, I'm not sure they do. It's going to leak someplace. It seems too neat. The COVID trick, they tried, you know, we've been at war for 8 weeks. They're right into it again. This is like the playbook. But Andrew and Wayne, as you well know, these playbooks, somehow or another, there's always a leak, right? I wonder what it's going to be.
Well, people are hearing it here. but a little after the fact, but the reason we study the past is to try to understand the present.
Well, we have stocks here for people. Microsoft has to be up $30 in the last 5 days. NVIDIA was up 10 days in a row. It's down $1 this morning. Does anybody think that's just good investing? That they're just that smart?
Well, I look at some of the personalities involved with some of these companies, and Bill Gates just does not leave a good impression on me. I know he's out of Microsoft now, but I think a lot of it is the brand, and I think the Microsoft brand, which was never very good anyway, because I now understand why people said, why are you using a Microsoft? You should use an Apple. Steve Wozniak is not quite as tainted as Mr. Gates.
Well, these guys have so much power, and every once in a while, if you listen on Tuesday a little bit, I mean Friday when Carl goes into this, we gotta go to break here in a sec, but. I don't know if you guys have a... I don't have a Kindle, but Audrey does. You see the change in the Kindle?
What? No.
If you have an older Kindle, they're going to stop supporting it.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Which means that everything you bought on the old Kindle is going to be gone.
Which is another reason why you should only... The only books you should buy are the actual real printed books. And speaking for Andy... I know. That's because we both have authored regular books.
Well, yeah, and Carl was talking the other day about how, I mean, he knows all this stuff. I don't. That Adobe now has done some stuff where the stuff you used to store in Adobe, it's their property now. They've decided it's their property. Some story where you can't get your own stuff out of the Adobe if you stored it there. Without buying some new service or something. I mean. I don't. What do you say we go to break, guys? We'll come back. You guys are going to fill us in on what's going on over in Ireland. I mean, I just hear bits and pieces.
Oh, yeah.
My brother has a friend over there, and she keeps regaling him with it, but I can't really find it anywhere. S&P Futures up 9, Nasdaq Futures up 50. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your bank's, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. We're back.
Lowell and Opec, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Jim Lawler on the board. S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 59. We're trying to go for yet another update in the queues. Maybe we will. Probably will. We certainly have the momentum going. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 140. That's 0.6%. FTSE up 60. 0.6%. CAC around up 45.6. Because all the central banks are really kind of doing the same thing. Nikkei up 1,300. It's 2.4%. Hang Seng up 446, 1.7%. Shanghai up 28.7%. Japan's Nikkei 225 hits record high as hopes for U.S.-Iran deal. You know what? I'm so friggin' tired of hearing about this. We're already higher than we were before the war started. How many more days can we be hoping for something going higher? I mean, there's got to be another reason. Just saying. Sorry about that. 10-year, unchanged, 4.28. The Bund, unchanged, it's at 3. Japan, 2.40. Oil, up 32 cents, but 91.61, well below the 115 or 120 it popped up at. The Brent is up 54 cents, 88.67. We've got RBOB at 308, down from the 315, but still over 308 roughly equates to, I'm going to say, add another 40, 50 cents for profit and maybe 40 cents for profit and transportation. Throw another 90% on that in some areas for taxes. So you're talking 430, which is about what it is here, 440. So it sort of adds up. And Pritzker, of course, says no way on earth is he lowering taxes, because every time the gas goes up, he gets more money. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Gold up $14, $48.37. Silver down 17 cents, $79.45. Foreign exchange, this is kind of a bigger. Dollar's up a little bit. Euro's 117.81. It was down to 115 and went back up. When I say that, the dollar was lower, then it went higher, and now it's the other way around. But the British pound, 135.45. Crypto down 256, but still at a fairly recent lofty level here at 74,720. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? He's simple. Cubs win, it's raining again.
Yes, Cubs win, big win. It is raining today, so on the inbound Kennedy, coming into Montrose, it's 27 minutes. On the inbound Edens, we are inbound to Lake Cook, is now 49 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower, from the inbound Eisenhower to Wolf, to the Jane Byrne, is 43. Inbound Dan Ryan, this does not look good, from 95th to 290, is now at 35. Weather, very quickly, in Phoenix, it is 62 degrees with a high of 88. In Chicago, you hit it on the head, Chief, rain, and that will continue with heavier rain tonight. But we are at 61 with a high of 66, a low of 47. And sports, yes, the Cubs win big again. So that makes 2 out of 3 in Philly. And back to you.
Guys, I'm not really into, like, piping Midwest water out west. You know, those guys made their bed and they can kind of live in it. But I actually wouldn't mind giving them the rain we're going to get today. We really don't need any more. Every stream here is overflowing. They could have tomorrow's rain. I'd give it to them. Just saying.
And we're in a drought situation here in Florida right now.
Here, you can't. Every day it's raining. Got to help you if you got a softball game, Wayne, for God's sake.
Yeah, we'll take some of that rain here.
Hey, I don't know if you guys heard, and I don't forget the name of the two knuckleheads, but esteemed citizens, there must be a state Senate race real close to Chicago, because it's all over the Chicago air here. Yesterday, I was listening to BBM as I was out doing some errands, and evidently the commercial is something I thought I'd never hear. You guys would love it. It was somebody's currently there, and he's Republican, and he's being challenged in the primary by another Republican. Well, the lady's rattling off that this guy, he's a traitor to the area because he voted against President Trump. And that the new guy will always follow President Trump and he won't betray you. He's a real conservative. First of all, do the conservatives think Trump's a conservative? I don't know. No, it just other than laughing at it, given the record of the last year and what happened to the guy in Hungary, do you really want to attach right now, even in a conservative area, you want to attach your pair of pants to Trump's behind? I don't know. Do you?
Yeah, and that defines what a cult is, because, you know, Trump is a cult leader. He thinks he's Jesus. He thinks he's God. And as long as you got that at play, you know, his followers will follow him to the grave. Unfortunately, in my own family, and I know other people, they have people in their family with kids or siblings that are totally into the cult.
And, I think people are leaking a little bit.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I said I think some are leaking a little bit.
Yeah, yes, so there is that, because, you know, the price of gasoline, for example, is shocking a lot of people out of the cult, and the cost of food. So there is that effect. But him getting into it with the Pope, the outgoing Republican senator from North Carolina said, history is not kind to those who challenge the Pope.
Well, J.D. Vance was giving him theology lessons yesterday.
Yeah, Shady Vance, I call him Shady. Shady Vance has only been Catholic for 6 years. He basically was mentored into the religion by those who are affiliated with a very, very hard right sect within the church, the Opus Dei.
Oh, he's one of those guys?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you look at all these Opus Dei affiliates. You got Newt Gingrich. He's a convert. You've got Larry Kudlow over on, Fox Business now. The late columnist, Robert Novak.
For those that don't know, followers of Opus Dei think that everybody in the current church is essentially a heretic. Because they go back to this
including the present Pope and his predecessor.
Anybody who is a Catholic after the Second Ecumenical Council, called by Pope John the 23rd when I was in grammar school, anybody after that is considered kind of a heretic.
That's correct.
Well, Wayne has been following this, and I'm looking at my shelf. I've got three books on Opus Dei, including a new one by I think his name is Gareth Gore. I'm looking at the cover.
Gareth Gore, who by the way, recently had an audience with Pope Leo, which shocked a lot of people in and outside of the Vatican, and was basically, I think, a message from Leo that, look, Opus Dei, their day is over. No pun intended.
Well, it was founded, really, just a little bit of history, in the 20s and 30s by a Spanish theologian. And so it's fairly recent.
Jose Maria Escriva, who was the personal priest to Generalissimo Francisco Franco.
Well, there we have it. And maybe just the last part. I mentioned I've got three books on the topic, probably the main three books, but the operations are so confidential that the first two books, which were investigative in nature, really didn't have names or details because it's secret. And it happens that Wayne and I had a mentor, I guess we can name him.
Oh, sure.
At the press club, John Hurley, very devout, conservative, Catholic. His father worked in
don't forget Irish.
Oh, Irish, yes. His father had worked in the Eisenhower and JFK White House press offices, and he went to Mass about six times a week. And he kind of mentored Wayne and me about some of these operations. And he looked on it. How would you describe it, Wayne? As
he said, "Look, I'm a sentimental Catholic. I'm not sentimental. Sacramental Catholic. I got to get his quote right. He did not like the politics that were brought in by the likes of the Opus Dei, for example. And they once had a very wired in head of the Opus Dei in Washington named Father McCloskey. And Father McCloskey was, I think he formerly worked in Wall Street. Do you remember, Andy? Wasn't he a broker?
I don't recall that.
And then he had his conversion, and he winds up in charge of the Opus Dei operation in D.C., which is called the Catholic Information Center. It's right on K Street in D.C., and this is the guy that arranged for a lot of these high-level conversions, including guys like Newt Gingrich and Robert Novak and Larry Kudlow.
Didn't they excommunicate Lefevre?
Was he Opus Dei?
I think he was.
I know there were some excommunications of those who rejected John the 23rd did. And
yeah,
the whole
mess.
Yeah, and they were strictly Latin mass.
The priest had to turn the other way, couldn't look at you, the whole bit.
That guy was, yes, you're right, that guy was excommunicated.
You want to hear, you got 3 minutes to humor you with a wacky story about this? The three of us have some of the most life experiences. Well, one of my buddies, he was not my roommate, but he was, you know, he's one of our group, aerospace engineer, he's from Florida. And I always thought he was a little odd, but not crazy or anything. We're down to Florida for spring break. We go to his parents' house, and there's an altar in the house, like an old-style altar. I'm thinking, you know, when you're young, all you care about is your next beer, right? So, and I never put two and two together, right? I just, I mean, that's kind of strange. He's got an altar in his house. I thought something like, well, maybe grandma can't make it to church, and the priest comes. Never put two and two together. So all of a sudden, this guy's dad dies. And you know, a lot of the people from Notre Dame lived in Chicago. So we're going to take one car. My stepfather's got one of those big old 98s, Oldsmobiles. They were like as big as a bus. So we pour six of us in this car, and off we go to, comfortably, and off we go to Michigan. And I'm thinking, you know, it's this little town, and it's this house. We pull in, and the guy's got this, like, little lecture room with, like, an altar, and I'm going, what's going on here? There was a cemetery down the road that was kind of Catholic, but wasn't really the Catholic. And all these people are wandering in. Guys, they were the weirdest looking people I've ever seen. And we're sitting in this room. There's six of us. And one of us, Jean Pearl, who's been on the year before, she's our expert on college admissions and stuff. She's sitting there, and, you know, she went to Notre Dame or St. Mary's, and she doesn't have a hat on. I remember women used to have to wear hats in church. So she doesn't have a hat on. So the guy, before he even starts, he starts railing at her for not having a hat on. And she's like, so finally she like pulls out a handkerchief and drops it on her head, and the guy goes, well, like that's acceptable or something. And so he starts launching the sermon. Was all about this one. It wasn't like this poor guy who died, and, you know, we're going to miss him. You know, Joe is a good guy. We now have one less soldier in the fight against the heathens. And he goes, and as I look around, there's heathens in this room. So one of the guys, even though he went to Notre Dame, was not Catholic, he was Lutheran or something, he leans over to me and he goes, does he mean us? Like, I think he does. we all we did was go to the poor guy's funeral, and we were the heathens in the room. We couldn't wait to get out of there. I mean, go to a bar. I mean,
you don't want to mention you're in the religion started by Martin Luther.
Yeah, but I mean, they knew we were the New Age Catholics. We were the heathens in the room.
Yeah,
I could not believe it. Hey, what's going on in Ireland, guys?
So Ireland has really been affected, other countries too, but Ireland by the fuel shortage. And they're rationing gasoline, which of course is causing prices of commodities, and you know, to go up, and they're hitting the major highways, shutting them down. The truckers are part of this. It's a huge protest now against the government. A lot of Irish were not happy when their prime minister showed up, the Taoiseach, right, Andy? Do I pronounce that right?
Taoiseach,
the Gaelic word for the prime minister, came over to the White House for St. Patrick's Week, and they were disgusted by that. They're also, Ireland is one of the most pro-Palestine countries in Europe. Some of this goes back to some actual liaison between the Irish Republican Army back in the day and the PLO. It's now very much the Irish public very much opposed to the war against Iran. They're very much opposed to what Israel's done in Gaza and Lebanon. Last week, some guy jumped up on top of a US C-130 at Shannon Airport, took a hammer, and starts pounding the gas on the wing, pounding the gas tank, it did some quite a bit of damage to it, because the Irish don't want their airports used for the war. All this has led up to the government over there being in some severe pressure, under some severe pressure, and it may collapse.
Well, what do they do? I was reading in part of these articles, that the ones that I can get, have to do with they've damaged some of their own infrastructure. But did they get rid of coal plants or something, and now they run out of fuel or something? Is there...
Yeah,
there's a whole list of policies they don't like these guys for doing.
The Green Party is very, very strong in Ireland, and they've actually, I think, have been in the government off and on as part of coalition. Sounds like a Ireland has a very extensive green movement. I know that sounds kind of strange talking about Ireland, but they do, and a similar situation with Germany that got rid of their nuclear power plants and now having severe issues with energy.
Well, that was stone cold stupid. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I was just going to say, just to stick with Ireland for another moment. You've got the opposition party is very enraged, active. This is a great issue for them, even though there's no real obvious solution, because the problem is created by the blockades, the lack of global oil and gas distribution. But you have... Sinn Féin is against the prime minister, or the Taoiseach, and he just narrowly won a no-confidence vote about 2 days ago, 92-78, I think. But while he promised subsidies and tax cuts and so forth, in Ireland, which has basically had a very strong economy in recent years, they can afford some of this, but with no real solution in sight. It's an example of what's happening and going to continue happening around the world, unless there's a solution.
Well, the people seem, even if you're a tried and true Trumper, you can't. Honestly, nobody can say that this guy has a clue how much this is affecting not only our lower class people and how it's affecting people around the world. I mean, we're talking $10 diesel. And
you're right. Now on the pundit shows, you hear open discussion about it. He's not mentally capable any longer of serving as president. It runs like he's got dementia. People say he's just plain out crazy. You never heard that, you know, you didn't even hear that 6 months ago.
Well, what,
but although Andy and I have been saying that for the last 10 years.
I would have said that 10 years, but I'm saying I don't understand at all, really, and I'm trying to, the people on the show, where we're at on this. Who's blockading what? Yesterday, allegedly, Carl sent me a thing that one of the big ships that got through, because we have some people who say it's all a massive intelligent plan to somehow screw China. Well, by the way, we owe China $800 billion, so we better not screw them too bad. I mean, like tomorrow, because we don't have the $800 billion, last I checked. But allegedly, the big, huge super tanker that got through was a Chinese flag tanker. So what I'll ask you guys, what happens tomorrow? Because, the president said people should help with the strait, help protect the strait. What if China shows up with a string of 10 tankers and two destroyers and say, we're going through? We're going to fight them? What are we going to do?
I my feeling is the emperor has no clothes. Haig said this morning, I guess he had a news conference early this morning, and he's using that as a pulpit to say the American media that's reporting on events in the Middle East is no different than the Pharisees. I mean, right now, if the Chinese Navy shows up, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do anything. We can't do anything, and it'll be just us and Israel, I guess, to suffer consequences.
What if five more Chinese tankers show up, and Iran says we're not stopping them? Are we going to stop them?
they may try, apparently there's a lot of U.S. military personnel now seeking the advice of law legal firms, questioning the orders. Apparently, the Army Chief of Staff was fired because he questioned the legality of an order. And I think, if there's a standoff with China, I think we may see something akin to either a general mutiny or a military coup.
One of the gentlemen who was our producer, Ricky, one of the nicest men I've ever met. And he's, I guess, pretty conservative. I think he's from, I don't know where he's from, somewhere in Central America. Pretty conservative. And he says, Chief, he goes, you don't have a very big view on Trump. And I said, Ricky, here's why. I mean, and this is just an old guy talking. You don't pay attention if you want to. I said, I've seen people for like a real long time. Now, you see them on the trading floor in high-stress situations. The day they've had their worst day, they got their ass kicked. Some people, no matter, you see them in those kinds of situations, you see how they react to crisis and to bad news and stuff. And if they come out logical, nice to people, tomorrow's a new day, let's fix it and go onward, versus people who just come totally unglued, hate people, there's always somebody else's fault, let's cheat my way through it. I think as you go further in life, you can count on those people, with few exceptions, to react the same way all along. And my view of Donald Trump is he's always been that kind of an ass way back when he was, and he's always going to react the same way. It's going to be somebody else's fault. It's never going to be his fault. He's going to cheat his way around it, and he doesn't care. A law is just a grievance to him. And by the way, he's not going to change his spots just because you plunk him in the old Oval Office. That's the way he is.
Yeah.
I said, Ricky, I've known you for 3 years. I know just by looking at you, by knowing you, that if all of a sudden there's a crisis, you're not going to lash out and shoot somebody or do something crazy. That's not the way you are. I don't know who your parents are, but they did a good job. I mean, am I wrong on this or not?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. It goes back to his childhood when his father, he was so disruptive. And when he was young, his old man had to send him to a military school up the Hudson River in New York. And they didn't do a very good job.
Well, I keep thinking, hoping that there's somewhere behind the scenes, and some of the people on the show certainly feel there are, that there are people that of morals and substance, and that they're just they didn't like the old world order. But I have to ask you this, though. I can't, the Democrats, I read something the other day, I can't even begin to go there. It's some state, I don't know if it's Illinois, they put some law in a committee trying to limit the amount of miles an individual can drive. You're going to give that to a guy who's a salesman or drives for a living? I mean, you give. Where do they think up this crap?
Too many think tanks, I think, are involved in policy.
What are we going to come up with? Anybody who thinks that the fact that Trump, in my opinion, is totally blowing the place up, that all of a sudden Kamala Harris and all that garbage is the answer. What planet are they on? They're as bad as the Trumpers.
Let me hop in here. Because I think there's a distinction between what's actually happening in, let's say, the Iran-Lebanon war and elsewhere, and gas prices and all the rest of this stuff, and what some kook somewhere has proposed. And I'm not sure that it's entirely fair to ascribe what some kook somewhere proposed to Kamala Harris. And, you know, I've got criticisms of her, but just on a basic factual basis, I don't think she's proposing that.
No, I don't think she either.
We live in a world where it's enjoyable but also practical to look for extreme situations up to a point, but we may not have that luxury. And just one other bit of context, we're complaining, many of us in the U.S., at $4 gasoline, but two things about it. In much of the world, the equivalent is $9 or $10 gasoline. We're fortunate by comparison. And the other thing is there's kind of a post-COVID effect here. So the Irish government, to get back to that, they were elected on affordability because with the supply chain problems after COVID, they had affordability problems there after COVID, and so the current administration is supposed to bring prices down, but they have nothing really to do with this international crisis that's creating the price problem.
Oh, absolutely. There's reasons why the gas prices are here and there and different in Europe because they don't have any gas. But I guess what my Andrew, every week you admonish me on this, and by the way, you're right, because I part of the way that I go to so far on this is just so you will admonish me, because I know that you're the voice of reason. But I'm saying the alternative to Trump can't be Mayor Johnson. If you live in Chicago, this is as corrupt as Washington is.
Well, he's not running.
I understand that, but I'm talking about people's view of the current Democratic Party.
Yeah, but of course, what we've got to do with the stakes increasingly serious is make the distinction that whether it's Mamdani, AOC, or Mayor Johnson, they're being elected for a certain numerical constituency, time and place, but that's not the Democratic Party in Texas. It's not the Democratic Party in North Carolina. What's needed for successful nationwide.
Well, what's your assessment if you were doing a... what are the guys where you can bet on all the outcomes? What are the chances?
The poly market.
Yeah, what are the chances in 2028 if I would say that we're going to get a very serious Democratic candidate that is 10 degrees to the left of center, and we're going to get a very serious Republican candidate that's 10 degrees to the right of center and agree on 75 of 100 issues and have ourselves like a real election? What are the chances of that? 1 in 9 million, me peeing in Lake Michigan, or what?
I'm not going to make that bet.
There are 15% or less. Because the problem is, in a way, either Vance or Rubio has the nomination kind of locked up, but they're unwinnable. Vance, particularly, he's not likable.
They're both Catholics, by the way, and I would just add Pope Leo this morning. He's got to be from the South Side.
He is.
He just said in Cameroon that the world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants. He's giving it right back to Trump and Putin and Netanyahu.
Well, but how does anybody think he's wrong?
He's not. Of course he's not wrong, but he's doubling down, and you got to admire that in a pope, you know?
The guy spent how many years in Colombia, you know, like a missionary thing? I'm sure he's...
in Peru, yeah. Living in the poorest of poor villages, helping not only Catholics, but non-Catholics.
He went to Mendel. My buddy Bill Murphy loves the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Mendel was one of the...
Now, his brother, Trump says, I like Lewis much better than Leo, you know, because Lewis is a MAGA.
Oh, God.
We all have him in our families.
Anyway, guys, I can't wait till next week. We always cover good ground. So what do you think, in Ireland, is this going to blow up or no?
Well, there's a temporary solution, which is subsidies, but ultimately you can't just subsidize energy prices. I mean, Ireland has been doing good on its economy, but
did you read a thing this morning that who the hell came up with this assessment? Europe's got 10 days left of jet fuel. Could that be right?
Yeah, it sounds like. Look, in some countries in Asia, they've completely run out of fuel, and Australia is really in an extreme position right now. They have very little fuel left in their fuel reserves.
Japan this week authorized from a conservative prime minister $10 billion to Southeast Asia to keep the supply chains functioning because they can't produce their stuff in Japan if Southeast Asia closes down because of...
What's going to happen if Japan, Britain, even Ireland has some money here, although it's U.S. people there? What if they don't show up with, you know, $300 billion at the next auction? What are we going to do?
Well, that would get President Trump's attention, but it may be too late because you don't just pull a switch and change things.
Okay, guys, till next week, if not before. Remember, everybody, Revolution Brewing. You go buy your six-pack this week. If you see one, why don't you just grab one? Or that's not till the month of May, though. Wait till May and buy two, because it's the month of May they're giving money to the Fisher House. SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 57. Jimmy, thank you. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
This is Bob Uecker saying thanks for watching.